Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 7th of May. Of course, our topic this morning, the Indiana and North Carolina primaries. The primary in North Carolina was a huge win for Senator Barack Obama, and the primary in Indiana was very close. It was about 2 points. And so today we look at this. There are calls from some Clinton supporters for her to withdraw from the race, but she is in West Virginia today, so obviously has no intentions of doing that. The primaries, her advisors acknowledged, were far less than they had hoped for, and that they were likely to face new pleas, even from some of their own supporters, for her to quit the race. They said they expected fundraising to become even harder now. One advisor said the campaign was essentially broke. Several others refused to say whether Mrs. Clinton had lent the campaign money from her personal account to keep it afloat. This, of course, comes on the heels of 3 terrible weeks for Barack Obama with the Jeremiah Wright story and the elitist comments. We'll be talking about his expansion of a delegate edge and also how he won North Carolina by such a huge margin and what happened in Indiana, and be welcoming phone calls. And we'll get a lot of them because you love these discussions, and we're perhaps nearing the end of political discussions, at least as far as the primaries are concerned. We have 2 guests with us this hour. Let me tell you, our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050 for you to join our conversation. Jarvis Hall, director of the Institute for Civic Engagement and Social Change at North Carolina Central University, is one of our guests. Professor Hall, thank you very much for being with us today. I think he's on that line. Oh, he's on this line. I'm sorry. I got mixed up. Professor Hall, thank you very much for being with us.
Morning, Kathleen. Happy to be here. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. It was my fault. I pressed the wrong button.
Okay.
Okay. Also, Professor Edward Carmines, who is Warner O. Chapman Professor and Rudy Professor of Political Science at Indiana University in Bloomington. Professor Carmines, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Let's start with North Carolina, which was a very large win for him, Professor Hall. How did he stack up such a really large victory, do you think?
Well, he was able to put together a very impressive coalition. And, of course, there's a high African-American population that makes up a large part of the Democratic electorate around close to 40% in terms of the Democratic electorate. But he was able to appeal to not only his traditional base as it has been formed in previous primaries and caucuses, but he was able to expand that to include those in rural areas as well as those who are at the lower income realm of the income ladder.
Mm-hmm.
So he was able to accomplish things that many people thought he would have some problems doing.
Yeah, he had come off such an awful 3 weeks. I mean, probably the worst 3 weeks of his campaign, and yet still had a large victory. So were those issues meaningless for voters or what?
Well, they're not meaningless. When you look at the exit polls, it appears, especially for those people who voted for Hillary Clinton, that the Wright affair, as some people are calling it, was very important. But he was able to overcome that with expanding his base by broadening those who are young, those who are college age, in terms of the number of people who are registered to vote, and really doing a wonderful job in terms of the early voting period. We had over close to 500,000 people to participate in the early voting period, and that set all kinds of records.
Isn't that something? That's a huge number. There is so much interest in this race. Professor Carmines, the margin of victory for Senator Clinton, when I was looking early on in the evening, I thought she was going to win big, but the Obama strongholds in the state came in late, didn't they? And the victory was quite narrow.
Yes, no, that's right. The Lake County results in northern Indiana came in. They were the latest to come in, and they were heavily for Obama, so that's the reason that closed down in the remaining moments of the election to just the 2% difference, as you noted earlier.
And what does it mean for her to win that state? Is it still a big thing, even though it was only 2 points?
Well, I think a lot of the luster was taken off because it was so close. But, you know, if she wants to continue, and apparently she does, she can at least say that she won another Midwestern state, and that's helpful. And so, you know, some of the luster was off, but enough probably to keep her in the race if she wants to remain in the race.
Mm-hmm. Is there any doubt at this point in either of your minds, the commentators, Tim Russert in particular, was saying late last night that the Democrats have their nominee right now as a result of this?
I think that's right, unless there's some huge unexpected development. You know, he's pretty much got it locked up. I mean, one can envision a scenario where he would lose it, but it really is quite unlikely and getting more unlikely as every day passes.
Do you agree?
And I would agree. When you listen to the tenor of the speeches last night from both Clinton and Obama, Obama had the air of an acceptance speech at a convention. That's what many people are saying.
Yeah.
Whereas Clinton was somewhat conciliatory, not conceding, obviously, because just as you have already mentioned, she is carrying on with the campaign. She's already in West Virginia. And the Clintons are diehards, as we know,
right,
in terms of political campaigns. But it appeared to be, to me, that she was saying that no matter what happens now, that she is going to support the nominee for the party and that we were good for it. So it seems to me that the stage is being set for Barack Obama to claim this nomination.
Mm-hmm. So you think it will go as far as, do you think we'll go to June 3rd with this, or do you think there will be so many superdelegates and actually advisors to her who will urge her to leave the race now so there's more time for Obama to take on McCain?
Well, I think as the days go by, it's going to be harder and harder for her to stay in. You know, there's only less than 200 delegates left. Actually, the biggest delegate prize right now is Puerto Rico. They have more delegates than any of the other five states weighing in, and they don't even vote in the presidential election.
Huh.
So I think as we go along here, the end result is pretty clear. And while she can stay in if she wants to, I think in terms of fundraising and in terms of the media attention and in terms of what the superdelegates are likely to do, the undecided ones, it's going to be pretty clear pretty quickly that an exit, if not, you know, in the next week or two, certainly easing into it by June the 3rd is probably what it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I think it's fairly obvious to many of us that this is going to be very hard for her to do. She has been campaigning ferociously for a long, long time.
No, I think that's right. And, you know, she's absolutely convinced, you know, that she would make a better candidate in the fall against John McCain, and she'd make a better president than McCain or Obama. So it's going to be very difficult for her to end this race. But on the other hand, she has a political future to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't want to be the one who fractures the party and leaves it in a vulnerable, perhaps a losing position in November. So she's got some other, you know, factors to weigh. So I think, you know, if it becomes clear, as it's becoming clearer day by day, that this is really not going to end in her nomination, I think at some point she will begin to ease out of the race. But, you know, she, as everyone knows, she's a fighter and extremely determined, and the Clintons hate to lose and, you know, are very vigorous campaigners. So I think that's the big, you know, question that she has to ask yourself and answer in the next few weeks.
Right. Professor Hall, do you anticipate a change in the nature of her campaign? It's been quite negative, and he's been brought down, of course, by the right story and the elitism story, et cetera. It didn't seem to play with voters. It didn't seem to make that much of a difference last night. But I wonder what kind of strategy she uses and if it's a strategy that brings him down more.
I think Professor Carmine is right in terms of her having to make some critical decisions in the next few days and weeks. And I think because of that, she has to look forward and see exactly how the nature of her campaign may impact the ability of the Democratic Party to be unified as we go into the fall campaign season. And so I think I would suspect that the negativity will be eased. I think that she will talk more about unity. She will talk more about what are the common values within the Democratic Party, sort of laying the groundwork for a unifying effort within the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you could see some of that in her speech last night, which, I mean, it was really two speeches in one. One, I'm going on, and I think I can win this. But the other was much more conciliatory,
right,
and much more unifying. And I think we're probably going to hear more of that latter than the former as the days go by.
Mm-hmm. I must say that Bill Clinton looked pretty glum last night.
He was tired. He had been in North Carolina quite a bit. He had gone to every small town, I think, in North Carolina. It was a very engaged campaign. I mean, he enjoys that kind of thing, but they put a lot of energy into North Carolina and into Indiana. And he did look very, very tired, very glum. But if anybody in the world is able to read the political tea leaves, it is Bill Clinton. And so he may know what the future holds for this campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his schedule is virtually as demanding as hers or Senator Obama's. So, I mean, he really was running more or less as a full-time candidate himself.
Right.
But they're not used to losing. I think they thought this contest was theirs to lose, and they didn't intend to lose it. But as it's turned out, they probably are going to lose it. So they've got to figure out a way to come to terms with that.
And when you think about it, gentlemen, that seemed virtually impossible 15 months ago. How did it happen? How do we find ourselves at a point right now when where it looks like Senator Obama will be the nominee?
Well, if you go back and look at this, you know, the way it kind of unfolded was that the Clinton campaign really had the idea that this would be settled by February 5th, the Super Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
when over 20 states held their primaries and caucuses. And when it didn't end there, because basically Senator Obama and Clinton split the vote on Super Tuesday, then they really were without much of a game plan. And so that's when Senator Obama, really made his move. And by winning the next 11 contests in a row, he built up this pledged delegate lead that he still holds. So if you really look at this, I mean, that's what happened in terms of on the ground. And, of course, the other thing that happened was the way in which Senator Obama inspired Democrats, especially young Democrats, was able to really run virtually a 50-state campaign, doing so well in many of these small caucus states. But,
yes,
you know, as you win in there by big margins, he built up a lot of popular vote and a lot of pledged delegates. So it really was something that they weren't prepared to deal with, the long campaign that it turned out to be. And he was much better suited to deal with it because he understood from the beginning that he was going to be the insurgent, you know, candidate, that she was the quote-unquote inevitable
mm-hmm.
candidate.
Right. Professor?
And because of his tremendous organization, both on the ground and in the virtual world of the cybernet, he was able to raise a lot of money from small donors. He was able to bring an impressive amount of new voters into the process and to broaden his base. And with his ability to do that and to do it at critical times within the primary period, he was able to, I think, surprise the Clintons. And they did not count on having to be in a situation like this at this point in the primary period.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, and the fundraising from month to month. I mean, you know, she broke all records for several months in fundraising, and then he doubled her in those months.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the sheer number of small donors that he got was really, I mean, that's really unprecedented in presidential nomination politics in the recent period.
Right. Can you imagine, gentlemen, what it must be like to go through this process? I can't imagine many human beings being able to keep up this pace.
Well, I was talking to my daughter last night, you know, and we were just marveling at how Clinton and Obama and their families and their staffs were able to endure this grueling process. But it's something that it takes special people in order to agree to engage in this kind of thing, and it takes a certain level of commitment, political savvy, and I know I would not be able to do it, you know, and I'm just impressed with the ability of all of the presidential candidates to put themselves through something like this.
No, I think that's right. I mean, you saw a little bit in the last few weeks as Senator Obama admitted, this had been a rough several weeks for him leading up to these primaries. And he looked a little tired, a little under the weather, but he seemed to regain his focus and regain his energy in the last few days. And she's never, you know, she's gotten a lot of bad news throughout this 15-month period, but she's never withered. I mean, she's always looked vigorous and strong. And, I mean, it does say a lot about their both their capacities for enduring these, you know, unbelievable 15 to 18-hour days, day after day, really week after week.
Right. What took it so long for the results to come in from Northwest Indiana last night?
Well, that was really, much of it was based on how they dealt with the absentee ballots. Most places in the state deal with absentee ballots at the precinct level. But in that part of the state, they do it centrally. And that really slowed down things in terms of getting those results. They really were not prepared for as many absentee ballots as they had to deal with, and they were counting them in a central location, and there were many thousands of them that had to be counted by hand.
Let's go to phone calls for both of you. We have a ton of people who want to speak on this. We're talking about the results of the Indiana and North Carolina primaries. Our guests are Professor Edward Carmines, Warner Chapman Professor and Rudy Professor of Political Science at Indiana University in Bloomington, Professor Jarvis Hall, who is Director of the Institute for Civic Engagement and Social Change at North Carolina Central University. Our phone number, try it in a moment because the lines are busy, 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050. Like to send an email? That's talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, E.J. Dionne will be our guest. He'll be talking about his new book, Sold Out, S-O-U-L-E-D, Out, Reclaiming Faith in Politics After the Religious Right. 800-486-8655, our number, Mike from Madison. Hello.
Hello, I have a math problem for the guests and yourself, if you are interested. There were 115 delegates in North Carolina. Indiana had 72 for a total of 187. But the news said, your news said, Obama got 95 and Clinton got 76 after losing in North Carolina and just winning narrowly in Indiana. That totals 95 plus 76 is 171. What happened to the 16 delegates? And how come Obama is not given enough credit for winning so big in North Carolina, and he got only 95 and Clinton got 76? And how? And next problem, math problem, is how many states are left for primary before June 3rd? I'll listen on the off the air.
All right, Mike, thanks very much for the call. Are we missing some delegates here, gentlemen?
You know, I think what's happened is that they haven't simply been allocated. You know, the way it works in Indiana, I think it's the same way in North Carolina. It's proportional representation, but it's a complicated way in which the proportional representation is done because some of the allocation is done statewide, based on the statewide vote, but most of the allocation is done by each congressional district proportionally. So it takes, you know, a little while to figure out exactly the allocation. And so, when they say proportionality, you have to really look at the particular state's allocation formula to see how it works. As the other delegates, of the other few that are remaining get allocated, I think, it'll be clear what happened.
I see.
In terms of his second question, there are five states and Puerto Rico that are left to vote in the primary caucus season.
Mm-hmm. And what's the likely breakdown there? She's going to win, he's going to win?
Well, I think, you know, West Virginia, which is next week, should be a good state for her. In the next week, on the 20th, then you have Kentucky and Oregon. She'll probably do better in Kentucky. He'll probably do better in Oregon. Then you have Puerto Rico, who knows what'll happen there, although I think they both have some hope of winning that. And then you finish up on June the 3rd with South Dakota and Montana. Mm-hmm. He's done well in that part of the world. He won Idaho and Nebraska and so forth. But, again, they have a very small number of delegates. So I think, you know, it looks, you know, maybe she's got a slight edge in these final six, but not much of an edge to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear the question, but I think the question was about how the delegates are allocated in the states. Is that correct?
He was wondering, when we were talking about how many delegates there were for each, that we were somehow missing 16 delegates. But what I want you to comment on, the other part of his question, I'm sorry you didn't hear it, Professor Hall, was why it is that Obama's not given enough credit for a very large victory in North Carolina.
I guess because of the expectations. At one point, he was leading by over 20 points, and with the things that have occurred with his campaign in terms of his comments that have been characterized as elitist, and with the Jeremiah Wright affair, Clinton, and with the vigorous campaign that Clinton was able to wage in the state, they were able to close the gap quite a bit. But still, of course, he finished with a fairly significant victory by double digits.
Right. Let's go to Jim from Salt Lake City. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen. Hey, I was just thinking last night that what needs to happen now to bring the party together is for Senator Obama to consider asking Senator Clinton to be his running mate. And he may not want to because of all the harsh feelings, and she may not want to accept it, but it kind of reminds me of LBJ and JFK, how that was a nasty race, but they brought the party together in order to win. And I hope both of them will consider doing that. And if she does decide to turn it down, I hope she's very graceful and somehow unites her group behind her, because I hate for these people to walk away, either not participate or even go on John McCain's side.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for your call. I can't see that happening, Professor Carmines. Can you?
No, I really can't see it happening. Now, I think one thing that might happen is that he, assuming he gets the nomination, he might ask someone who's been a supporter of Senator Clinton's, for example, like Senator Bayh, mm-hmm. to join him on the ticket. I don't think that's out of the question. I think that would be a unifying step. But I don't think either one of them, and I especially don't think she's going to end up being the vice presidential nominee. I don't think he's probably going to ask her, and I doubt she would actually do it, if he did ask her. So I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, I could see, you know, reaching out to someone who had been a supporter of hers, and that would be, as I say, a unifying move if he did so.
Mm-hmm. Would you agree, Professor Hall?
I would agree in general. For many Democrats, of course, that would be the dream team.
Right.
It would help to satisfy the desires of many within the party who see value in both the candidates. But I agree. I don't think I'm not sure he will ask, and I'm not sure if asked, she will accept. Now, the caller did mention 1960, which, of course, is very important in terms of this type thing. It may be that the political pressure is so much on both of them that they may be almost forced to accept this dream team ticket. And that would be interesting to see what goes on in the back rooms, as they say, to bring this about. But it is, right now anyway, it's a very unlikely scenario.
Mm-hmm. We go to Stan next from Madison. Hi, Stan.
Thank you. I think that at this point, as far as what voters can do to end this bloodletting is, I think the thing that we can do right now is to make phone calls, emails, and snail mail to the superdelegates who are elected officials in the state of Wisconsin. And this is particularly important in my district, in the 2nd Congressional District, with regard to Tammy Baldwin, who has thrown in with Hillary, and with also Senator Cole, who has not said a word about who he supports. So I think that we should start putting pressure on our own super delegates, and flood them with letters and phone calls to throw their weight behind Obama and come out forcefully in favor of Obama and end this this bloodletting.
Thanks, Jan, for the call. Professor Carmines.
Well, you know, I think we're going to see something like that going on. I mean, a lot of the undecided superdelegates are actually in Congress, either senators or House members. They've been waiting, and I think they were waiting to see what happened in these two states because these were the two biggest prizes left in the primary caucus season. But now that this has happened, there's really not much left to wait for. So I think they're going to, you know, begin to move the undeclared superdelegates, and I think day by day more of them are going to decide, and I would expect a lion's share of them to decide for Senator Obama during the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, here in North Carolina, 9 of the 19 are uncommitted, you know, and I suspect that after this resounding victory by Senator Obama in the North Carolina primary, that we will see more movement by the uncommitted toward Senator Obama.
So how many does he need at this point to end this?
How many super delegates
does he need to get?
Well, let's see. I mean, he probably, there's about 275 that have still not declared. If he won, 175 of them, given what's likely to happen in the rest of the primary caucus states, he would be over the 2025 mark. So, you know, he really doesn't need that many. Really, he could split them evenly and still, you know, given, you know, anywhere near what he should show in these next states and have the 2025 that would be needed for the nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the electoral math doesn't look very good for Senator Clinton when you look at the possible scenarios in the remaining states, even if she has a significant victories in those states, along with, say, half of the superdelegates, it still wouldn't get her over the top.
Right. And please explain to me how they're deciding Michigan and Florida.
Well, no one knows at this point. You know, I mean, if you heard some of the Clinton team talking this morning and last night, you know, of course they want those elections to be treated just like they were any other caucus or primary. But, you know, that's just not going to happen. They were two slightly different situations because Senator Obama was not actually on the ballot in Michigan, where he was on the ballot in Florida. But in neither state did either of the candidates campaign. So it's very difficult to see how that's going to be resolved. I suspect they'll have to find a compromise. They want Howard Dean, the chairman of the party, wants very much to seat a delegation from both those states. I think they'll end up doing so, but I don't. It's not going to be decisive in terms of the outcome of the nomination process.
Mm-hmm. What about this money issue? It's just over the AP that Clinton is lending herself another $6.4 million to continue on. Don't they have easy access to money? They are huge names in the Democratic Party. How could she be broke?
Well, you know, it takes $1 million a day to run one of these campaigns. Yes, I mean, it's extremely expensive. Now, it's true, the states they're going into now, West Virginia, Kentucky, and so forth, are not big media states. It's not as expensive to campaign there, but it still takes a lot of money to run a campaign every day, and you know, the results that she had last night are not going to open up new donors to her. So, I mean, they spent a lot of money they didn't have in Indiana and North Carolina, and so, you know, they're going to have to take extraordinary measures to run a very vigorous campaign in the remaining states, whereas Senator Obama still has a fairly hefty war chest, and his showing last night will ease his fundraising for the rest of the campaign, I suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree. I think because the Clinton campaign is behind right now, that even though those are low expenditure states or whatever you want to call them, that because they have to do so much in order to catch up, that's going to put a great deal of pressure on the financial side for the Clintons.
Let's go to an email. Hold on one second. Let's not go to the email yet because I got to get it figured out. We'll do that momentarily. Let's go to Scott from La Crosse. Hi, Scott.
Hi, good morning to all of you. I have a question about the superdelegate push, which my understanding was that a whole bunch of them were really waiting for the final indicator, and maybe this was it. And the premier among those I've been hearing are Gore and Edwards. And in Edwards' case, I'm counting both John and Elizabeth because I think they're both key. And I'm wondering, now that North Carolina's over, do you foresee the Edwards maybe coming out as the beginning of the flood of the superdelegates to finally clinch the deal? And I've got one more follow-up question if I could ask it.
Okay.
Well, it will be interesting to see what John Edwards does. A lot of folk have been anticipating, and this is not anything directly from Edwards or his staff, but people are anticipating that he will come out in support of Barack Obama, and especially after the outcome from last night. As you know, both have made overtures toward Edwards because they know that the folk who voted for him, especially on those populist issues, economic issues, with the economy being the number one issue here in North Carolina, when you look at the exit polls, that base will be key for the national campaign also as we go forward. So he has not made a public decision, but there's a lot of speculation here around the state that indeed he will come out for Obama, and especially if you're looking at the fact that he will be concerned with trying to mend the party as we go into the fall.
Mm-hmm. Scott, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to, we have some emails. Al from Milwaukee, would you comment on Clinton's dismal 2-point showing in light of the 6-to-10-point prediction? Also, I think the big loser in this primary cycle is the political lobby system. Obama joins earlier Democrats in showing that money can be raised without the lobbies. Would your guests comment?
Well, you know, this set up, if you look at Indiana, I mean, I think it did set up as a state that the Clinton campaign was hoping to win by 5 or 6, 7, 8 points and so forth. But on the other hand, there were some advantages for Senator Obama here, especially the fact that it's a neighboring state to Illinois. So he was better known in certain parts of Indiana, the western part and the northern part, than he was in some of the states like Pennsylvania, where he lost by double digits.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, he did better than expected. But she was able, you know, to hold on. So, I mean, they each have been trying to spin, you know, what this means in terms of the remaining part of the election. You know, as I said earlier, in terms of the fundraising, especially by Senator Obama, has been really remarkable. The number, the hundreds of thousands of small donations that he's received really is unprecedented in terms of nomination politics. I mean, we often overlook the fact that she also has raised an amazing amount of money. So they both have done spectacularly well in terms of fundraising, but he has really outperformed her in this, and it just shows, you know, his capacity for inspiring, you know, hundreds of thousands of voters and many donors who had never given to a political party or candidate before.
Yeah, and talk a little bit more about what that's all about, James, Professor Hall.
Well, I was going to say also that I think it's important that he can always use that to counter this elitist label that the Clintons have attempted to put on him. The fact that when you look at who is supporting his campaign, it's not the lobbyists, it's not the traditional donors, and certainly he has gotten some money from some individuals who are big money donors. But at the same time, most of his donors have been below $250, some giving $5, $10, whatever they can.
Yeah.
And so I think that's very significant in terms of the nature of his campaign and his whole argument that he is creating a new politics in Washington. And as I said, I think that this could be used to counter very effectively this elitist label that some have attempted to put on him.
Yeah. Galen from Oak Park, Illinois. Hi, Galen.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead.
Thank you very much. I have canvassed for Barack Obama in four states. I live in Oak Park, Illinois, and I canvassed in Iowa, St. Paul, Minnesota, and most recently in East Chicago, Indiana. And that really is behind my phone call. I was surprised when I did door-to-door work in East Chicago, Indiana, how warm the response for Obama on behalf of the Hispanic homeowners. They were really warm. They were enthused. And I was surprised because I didn't expect, given some of the past reports we've gotten, that Obama probably did quite well among the Hispanic voters in that industrial town. So I'm just wondering whether some of your guests have some points of view with respect to Indiana in particular, but also with respect to how well he did in the industrial towns of northwest Indiana primarily.
Okay, Professor Carmines, can you've probably looked at that.
I think he did do better than expected in some of those towns. And I think, you know, it's been interesting in some of the past contests, Senator Clinton, for example, in Texas, did better among Hispanic voters than Senator Obama did. But I don't think in the end that they're going to be difficult for him to bring into the Democratic election in November. I think he can appeal to those voters, and I think he showed some appeal to that in Indiana in terms of Hispanic voters. So I think that's a constituency that she's won pretty much if you look throughout the various primaries and caucuses. But I think it's one that he certainly has shown some potential for bringing into the Democratic coalition in November.
Mm-hmm.
And here in North Carolina, this is a state where the Hispanic population has grown tremendously, and we don't have any data in terms of how the right now, anyway, in terms of how the Hispanic vote broke down in the primary yesterday. But immigration is certainly a big issue here. It was not one of the top three in terms of issues that impacted the way voters cast a vote. But I suspect that Barack Obama, if indeed he is the nominee, will be able to pull a significant portion of the Hispanic electorate into his coalition.
Mm-hmm. Let's pause for just a moment and return and take more calls. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The Indiana and North Carolina primaries this hour of the program. Professor Jarvis Hall, director of the Institute for Civic Engagement and Social Change at North Carolina Central University, is our guest, as is Professor Edward Carmines, Warner O. Chapman Professor and Rudy Professor of Political Science at Indiana University, Bloomington. I know you have to leave a little early, Professor Hall, so just, just tell us when you have to go. Don't worry about it. Let's go to Scott. Oh, no, let's go first here to Irene in email. My suggestion is that Obama should call Clinton and tell her she would make a great Secretary of State. She should realize she has no chance for the presidency, and she has a lot to offer our country by using her experience and knowledge as Secretary of State. Also, I think Bill Richardson would be a great choice for Vice President. Professor Hall?
Secretary of State. Quite obviously, she has the name recognition, the reputation, even in international affairs. And, of course, that's one thing that she has staked her campaign on is the fact that she, while in the White House as the First Lady, she was engaged in foreign policy. So it's certainly a possibility. But, again, I think that Hillary Clinton wanted the presidency. I think that was a prize that she has had her eye on for a long time. I would not anticipate that she would agree to accept such an offer if offered. Bill Richardson would be a very attractive vice presidential pick, I think. Quite obviously, the pluses would be in terms of his ability to perhaps to solidify and to bring more of the Hispanic vote in support of nominee Obama, if indeed he is the nominee. He ran a very good campaign while he was a candidate himself for the presidency. So both of those things are very intriguing. I have my doubts about a possible position as Secretary of State for Clinton, but I think that Bill Richardson would be a strong strong possibility for VP.
Professor Carmines?
Well, I don't think there's going to be any phone call between Senator Obama and Senator Clinton at this point.
Probably not.
No, the last thing that the Obama people want is to look like they're trying to push her off,
right,
push her out of the campaign. You know, that's a decision she has to come to, and you know, they're not going to try to do that. That would not be, reinforce the image that he wants, and it probably wouldn't work anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think she's going to end up as Secretary of the State. Bill Richardson, I think, could very well find a place in, if Obama were to win in November, I think he very well could find a place in the cabinet, because I think he would, in fact, he might even possibly be a vice presidential nominee.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he will end up playing, you know, a prominent part in the campaign and possibly in, if Obama were to win, in an Obama administration.
Mm-hmm. Well, he certainly took a lot of heat for his endorsement of Obama, didn't he?
Oh,
from
he
the
did.
Clintons.
You know, I think that was, you know, this has been very hard on some of these old associates of the Clintons.
Right.
As some of them have peeled away. And you know, James Carville attacked personally Richardson in a way he didn't attack some of the others. I don't know what exactly was going on there, but there clearly is some very bitter feelings about some of these, and much of it directed toward Richardson, who they seem to feel that he was either going to remain neutral or support Senator Clinton. And when he moved to support, endorse Senator Obama, it really raised Cain in the Clinton campaign.
I am going to have to take off now, but I really enjoyed participating in this discussion.
We loved having you on. We'll talk with you again. It's not over.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, Professor Jarvis Hull from North Carolina Central University, having to leave us. Professor Edward Carmines is still here. Warner O. Chapman Professor and Rudy Professor of Political Science at Indiana University. We have lines open for you right now as we look at those primaries in North Carolina and Indiana. If you've been trying to get through, lines have been busy. But now you'd be happy because you made a phone call and Rhonda would pick up the phone and say hi. And then you'd be on the air and talk. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. Scott from Appleton, hi.
Yeah, hi. First of all, we should all enjoy this, revel in the moment. It's a democracy, and our generation may never see this type of a debate again with two exciting candidates. My point is, a lot of this rhetoric, and thank you for the guests, to articulate through all of this media mess where you've got 4,000 stations broadcasting gosh knows what. With the way it's playing out, I interpret this as a lot of the negativity about the goings-on are really going to affect the GOP more, given the last two election cycles, and it's evident what the GOP Republican playbook has been. As of yet, they do not have a target for the neocon attack dogs to focus on. They do not have, when I say they, I just mean the opposing party, a target for their swift boat, let's say, people to target in on. And the longer this draws out, the worse it may be that, hey, we're just not going to be able to have the personality attacks, the bizarre goings-on of whose minister said what. And I think this is actually a good experience, and it gets people talking, it keeps the dialogue going, but it's also keeping this negativity to a shorter lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
With the Republicans not having their target. And I'll just listen to my comments off the air.
Thanks, Scott.
Well, you know, that's an interesting comment. I think, though, that what you see in the Senator McCain's campaign and more generally among the Republicans is pretty much they've concluded what most people have concluded, that is, that Senator Obama is going to be the candidate. So they have really begun to shift the focus of their attention to Senator Obama. And I think that's likely to continue and, in fact, intensify you know, in the next few weeks. You know, we'll have to see exactly, you know, how, I mean, I think Republicans early on were geared up to run against Senator Clinton. Now they're being presented with presumably a different opponent, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, what kind of a campaign they end up running against Senator Obama if he turns out to be the nominee.
And let's hope it's not who's got the worst minister.
Well,
on both sides, right?
Who knows what's going to be brought up?
Right,
I mean,
right.
You know, some of this has already, in the last 3 weeks, we've had some of this brought to the fore. Has it run its course? Is there more to be learned? I mean, these are all things that, you know, will have to unfold in the campaign. I mean, I suspect really the main line of attack that the Senator McCain and Republicans will use against Senator Obama is really his inexperience, mm-hmm. newness to the national stage, lack of experience in national security affairs, and so forth. But, you know, we'll see what turns out to be the themes that they try to develop.
Yeah. Scott, thanks for the call. Marty from Douglas County is next. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good morning. So let's talk vice president.
All right, let's.
Who would your guests consider possible candidates? I know Bill Richardson would be fabulous just to help bring the Hispanic vote in. But just some names and any women's names circling around out there in the ether?
Well, you know, I mean, there are lots of possibilities, but I think, you know, Bill Richardson, I think, is an intriguing choice. I think Senator Bayh from Indiana is a possibility. And I think there's some, you know, there's some women, members of Congress who are possibilities, and, you know, also that there are governors who are possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So I think really, you know, I don't think the Obama campaign, I don't think they've really shifted their focus to that yet, and I think probably it's good that they haven't, because they still have enough time to sort through this and see, you know, what would work best for them. I mean, it's if he turns out to be the nominee, he'll have to find someone that he's comfortable with, someone who adds something to the ticket, but also someone who doesn't overshadow him. So, you know, all these picking a vice presidential nominee turns out to be a pretty complicated process these days, and it's likely to be so this time for Senator Obama if he turns out to be the nominee.
Who's your choice, Marty?
For vice president?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like an Hispanic woman, actually. There's a congresswoman out in California whose name escapes me. I think Linda is her first name, she's been in the news over the last several years. I don't think she'd be a complete unknown. She's very intelligent. I would just love to see it be a woman, though. Come on, mm-hmm. let's get it all going this time. Thanks,
Catherine. Thank you, Marty. Let's go to Catherine from Lake Geneva. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to know if Indiana and North Carolina or any of the next upcoming primaries, if the Republican people can go out and cross-vote for a Democratic candidate that would either help the Democratic Party or hurt the Democratic Party.
Yes, there's some possibilities there. You know, some of these remaining primaries are primaries that are held in states where independents can participate in the Democratic primary, and sometimes even Republicans. So there's some possibilities for that. And in fact, you know, we saw some of that in Indiana. Indiana is a state where it really allowed independents, but also allowed Republicans, if they asked for a Democratic ballot, they could have a Democratic ballot. And so we saw some of that in Indiana. Looks like from the exit polls, about 10% of Republicans participated in the Democratic primary. And so it's not a large percentage, but still not negligible. And some of the remaining states, there's also that possibility for that to happen.
And I know a lot has been said about this. I don't know if it's too much. Did they go because Rush told them?
You know, I don't think there was too much of that. I think they were, to some extent, yes, but I think a lot of them were really caught up in the tremendous, you know, campaigns that both of these candidates ran in Indiana. Mm. And it looks like that, you know, Senator Clinton got a percentage or so more of that vote than Senator Obama did, but it wasn't dramatic difference in terms of how they split their vote. So I think there was some strategic voting like that, but I think more of it was that these were two very vigorous and, you know, air-filled campaigns, and I think a few Republicans wanted to participate in that, got caught up in the campaign and wanted to participate in it.
Just in 5 seconds, we're almost out of time. Did anything surprise you about last night?
I was a little surprised that it was as close as it was in Indiana. It looked like, you know, the last few polls that I saw had her up closer to 5 points. And so the fact that came within 2 points, I think, was a bit of a surprise here.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
We love these conversations. Professor Edward Carmines, he is a professor of political science at Indiana University in Bloomington. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for putting together a great show as we analyzed last night's primaries, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We have another terrific hour, so stay with us. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.